Those of you who I have not met yet, my name is Kevin. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm going to be continuing and concluding our series on the letter called Jacob, formerly known as James. If that's confusing, please see the previous talks that we have given. It's always good to end a series with the beginning. Jacob begins by stating, "My brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials, consider it all joy, because you know that the testing of your faith produces endurance, and let endurance complete its work, so that you may be complete and whole, lacking in nothing." Everybody say, complete,
complete.
And whole. Complete and whole. In 1961, a meteorologist at MIT named Edward Lorenz was performing some tests, and he was doing some studies. This is predicated upon the idea that the world works by certain laws, by certain ways, by certain deterministic forces. And if you could understand what those forces are, you can understand what those laws are, and you can understand the material nature state of things, you could actually predict the future. He was working on a glorious machine called the Royal McBee LGP-30. Ain't it a beaut? This computing machine was running various calculations based upon certain meteorological factors, such as humidity, temperature, air pressure, wind speed, wind direction, solar radiation, and more. And the idea is, if you could start with a certain set of values and determine what those values are going to be and how they interact with one another, you will be able to actually predict the weather. So he's running these calculations, and he comes up with a variety of values. And you can see that they all kind of coalesce into a certain area. He decides to run them again because he wants to see a certain portion of it. So he enters in the values starting at a particular place, but then when the computer ran them again, notice line 50. Line 50 doesn't actually come up with the same values. In fact, line 50 comes up with some radically different values from what he previously ran. Now, when he saw the conclusion of these values, he thought there might have been some sort of error, some sort of glitch, some sort of anomaly with the computer. But he later determined that it wasn't any anomaly at all. See, when he went to coffee and re-entered the values of all those different variables, he had entered in actually the 10th, the 100th, and the 1,000th place, because that's what the computer was actually spitting out to save paper. But what the computer actually was doing was calculating values based upon the 10,000th, 100,000th, etc. place. And so when Edward Lorenz decided to go back and revisit that particular set, he entered in exactly the numbers as he saw them. The temperature value was actually 0.506. So he entered in exactly 0.506. And according to just pure math, you would imagine this would spit out the exact same values. Why they didn't spit out the same values is because he actually entered in 0.506000, whereas the machine had actually calculated 0.506127. This extremely small variation caused him to consider a hypothesis that extremely small values in calculation could yield wildly different effects. He published this particular paper, a very well-known scientific paper now, with the title, "Does the Flap of a Butterfly's Wings in Brazil Set Off a Tornado in Texas?" giving rise to our now famous phrase, the butterfly effect. And I think there's like over 20 movies now with this title, as well as memes, etc. Edward Lorenz's observation and experiment that day changed a lot of perceptions and ideas that people had about science, about weather, about math, et cetera, et cetera, and most fundamentally about our universe. Could we actually calculate everything that we could know and put that all into consideration and then predict the weather? Well, let me ask you this question. How well does weather.com actually do? The reality is we can't. And the reason why we can't is because of this hypothesis, which has now emerged into our vernacular, into some scientific realms, called chaos theory. The basic hypothesis, the basic thesis that I would like to share for us today is simply this. Those minute calculations in Edward Lorenz's computer, very, very, very small values, over time, compounded with other factors, can yield wildly different effects in the world. Hence, weather patterns potentially being created and or caused by the flapping of butterfly wings. And it is this idea that I think Jacob is actually touching on. I actually think much of the biblical text is touching on this regularly. And I think what Jacob did in the very beginning of his text is pointing this exact same thing out. In that the whole point of this testing and trial that we are going through is so that we can actually be complete and whole. Edward Lorenz's calculations were incomplete. They didn't actually capture the whole. Now, one of the underlying factors that leads into this hypothesis is a term, an idea called fractals. Everybody say fractals. This is, every time I hear this word, I feel like I'm cursing, but nonetheless, fractals. What is a fractal? A fractal is an infinitely complex pattern that are self-similar across different scales. And they are created by repeating a simple process over and over in an ongoing feedback loop. The idea is that that flap of the butterfly wings can create a particular pattern. That pattern can then multiply upon itself to create additional patterns. Those larger patterns can create additional patterns upon themselves. On and on and on it goes, till all of a sudden you are leading up to the hurricane, the storm. This is actually a pretty decent visualization or understanding. What is happening when the butterfly flaps its wings? There are small little vortices of air that are happening, actually. There's disruptions in the fluid dynamics of the air when that is happening. What is happening with the tornado? It really is the exact same kind of thing, just at a completely different scale. And if chaos theory is true, and if these fractals are actually true, if this is what is underlying our universe, our existence, the way that life really works, then it is pretty, and it's an astonishing, mind-blowing thing to think that that could actually cause that. These fractals exist everywhere, by the way. Many of you are going to be very familiar with what's known as the Koch snowflake. A snowflake begins with one particular shape, but then it multiplies itself, shape over shape. The same kind of pattern over and over and over again is what gives rise to the shape of the snowflake. That is called a fractal. Another example of a fractal is a river that flows down a bank. And then all of a sudden it splits into two rivers. It's the same pattern, but now it has multiplied itself over the course of time and over the course of geography. Another fractal that exists is in your human body. Your nervous system, your circular system are fractals. Starts with a large aorta, large conduit by which blood flows, and then it fractures into these smaller capillaries. But they are essentially the same kind of structure, just at a different level, at a different expression. My favorite fractal, which is going to change the way you eat food forever, is broccoli. Do you ever think of broccoli as a fractal? Yeah, every night when you have dinner. I'm eating a fractal right now. That's what you thought. Broccoli, this happens in nature, this happens with trees, where it starts with a particular pattern, a stalk, and that pattern multiplies itself over and over and over and over and over again, all the way through. And of course, one of the most beautiful expressions is the Romesco broccoli. Have you ever wondered why it looks in this particular way? It's because what we believe, what we actually understand, is that the basis of our biology starts with these patterns. And these patterns multiply themselves over and over and over again in this self-repeating fashion, in an ongoing feedback loop, to give rise to these amazing structures, to these amazing, beautiful things that we see. But what we are seeing here is really an expression of one simple thing that began, one small little disruption, perturbation in the biology that gives rise to something this large. I found this just for fun. Study finds that by age 3, kids prefer nature's fractal patterns, and they would prefer to actually eat the Romesco broccoli rather than the regular broccoli. So give that a try next time you need to figure that out. Seeing people have tried to give some visualization to this. If you just keep zooming in, the idea is that not only do fractals make their way up, but they also make their way down. You could look, keep going down, down and down and down, to see these patterns actually don't ever stop. They continue on down. Your neurology gets down to the cellular level down to the atomic level, down to the quantum level, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And yes, I just want to let you know that I saved you 2 hours and 13 minutes of an ongoing, what's called a Mandelbrot set, a constant visualization of those fractals all the way at nature. Now, some of you are like, I thought this was a church, not a science class. Thank you very much. What are you doing talking about all of this? I would like to propose to you, my friends, that this is actually the base fundamental pattern of the universe. If you believe that God has designed the world to be the way it is, then you would imagine that you would find these patterns, and you would find the exact same kind of design, intentionality, at every single level of our universe. And then when it comes to our discipleship, when it comes to Jacob, when it comes to our biblical studies, when it comes to what does it mean to actually be a follower of Jesus, I'm going to suggest that this idea is actually incredibly profound. And so that's why I'm calling this and entitling this Fractal Discipleship, Whole and Complete. And as I alluded to before, if we only think of our discipleship, our following of Jesus, our sense of faith and our sense of commitment to God only in certain sets, and we don't calculate that extra set, that extra 127 at the end, at the 10,000th, at the 100,000th decimal place, it appears as if what could be the case is that missing those particular elements could actually fractally lead up to some very, very different results in how we live. Jacob actually alludes to this, Jacob chapter 1, verse 2 through 4. My brothers and sisters, whenever you face various trials, consider it a joy because you know that the testing of your faith produces endurance. Let the endurance complete its work so that you may be complete and whole, lacking in nothing. So he's talking about don't forget about all the things. Now, to understand the completeness and the wholeness better, we understand the underlying Greek, the word for complete there is the word telos. We've talked about telos before. Complete, finish, fully mature, an execution to a resolve. And then holokleros, it just simply means the whole, the entirety of all the things. The image that you can imagine for telos is that you're aiming for something and you actually hit it. The goal is when the arrow hits the bullseye, that is your telos. You've completed, you've actually accomplished the thing that you were designed and aiming for and shooting for. And one of the wonderful images for holokleros would be a puzzle. The puzzle isn't complete. Can I tell you how irritating it is to get to the end of a 5,000-piece puzzle and to have that one piece somehow missing because the dog ate it? It is not whole. It is not complete. To understand what Jacob is doing here, what he's saying is that you have to think about discipleship. You have to think about your faith, and you have to think about what it means to follow Jesus holistically, the entire thing, the complete thing. The suggestion here is that discipleship is supposed to be about everything, whole, from beginning to end, all the way through. The idea of being a follower of Jesus doesn't, you don't segregate, bifurcate particular parts of your life in one way and other way. And according to my story that I opened up with Edward Lorenz, you need to even think about and consider how the smallest aspects of who we are and how we live can lead to large effects. To embrace fractal discipleship is to pursue completeness and wholeness. It is to recognize that the very smallest patterns of life can yield huge butterfly effect consequences through these self-repeating patterns, these fractals, repeating the same principles over and over in a continual feedback loop. Let me see if I can continue to drive this point home for us. Jacob chapter 1, verse 14. But one is tempted by one's own desire, be lured and enticed by it. There's a lot of talk about desire and what is that I want, and what's wrong with me wanting or desiring something? Well, Jacob actually points out that desire can actually have much larger effects. Then, when desire has conceived, it engenders sin, and sin, when it is fully grown, can give birth to death. A desire can actually lead to compounding patterns of desire that can ultimately give birth to death. If that's the case, then, to be whole and to be complete is to pay attention to that desire, to not just leave it to the side, to not just ignore it as some sort of fluke, to recognize that that is actually a fundamental underlying pattern that we have to pay attention to. Jacob 3:3 alludes to this again. If we put bits into the mouths of horses to make them obey us, we guide their whole bodies. A wonderful, brilliant example is given. My daughter is taking up equestrian sport. A small little bit can move armies. The small little fractal of moving, shifting, changing can have compounding effects that can shift and change empires. Look at ships. They are so large, and yet they move by strong winds and guided by very small rudders. Huge effects, small causes. Jacob 3:5, the tongue, very small member. It boasts of great exploits. How great a forest is set ablaze by such a small fire. Jacob 4:17, anyone then who knows the right thing and fails to do it, commit sin. Knowledge, internal thing, something that nobody even has to know about, can actually lead to some significant effects. Like I said, I think this is a biblical principle throughout. Mustard seed, yeast, habits, thoughts, even in mercy and justice. When you read the biblical text over and over and over and over again, the text is calling us to expand our understanding to those little things. That mustard seed, that smallest little thing, do you realize what it can do? That little kind of faith? Jacob is calling out a very similar kind of thing. Those small little patterns, prayer, what we say, how you treat one another, your attitude, etc., can lead to huge effects in this world. Listen. I understand why people criticize the church and faith and religion and all that kind of stuff for, like, why are you getting in my business? Like, isn't this just my, like, you deal with your thing, I'll deal with my thing. Just leave me alone. What's it bothering anybody? Now, there's fair discussion because this is Spark. We can have wonderful conversations and debates about all of that. But one of the reasons why faith, the biblical story, discipleship of Jesus, pushes so hard into every aspect of your life is because it cares deeply about this patterning effect. You know, if you stop praying, sure, okay, small thing. Really? Is it really just a small thing? If you stop saying please and thank you, if you stop being slightly compassionate just to your neighbor, Just go down the line of what you might think are small effects in this universe. According to everything that we know about how our world works, about our biology, about the way in which our ecology works, those little patterns multiply themselves fractally over and over and over again in a constant repeating feedback loop that can yield huge consequences for this world. And one of the reasons why I think we don't care about those things is because we have fractured ourselves. The modern world has done this. We think that who we are, or our identities, or how we navigate the world, is split up into various aspects. And what I do at work, and what I do at home, what I do with my sex life, what I do with church life, what I do with politics, are all various separate things. And we can even, this is a whole nother sermon, this is exactly what hypocrisy is, actually. Hypokrites is a Greek word to mean an actor. Somebody who puts on a mask and acts a certain way in one segment, takes off the mask, puts on another one to act something different in another place. So when you split your life and your world into these various segmented parts, then of course it doesn't matter what I do at work or what I do at home, it doesn't have any effect. But you know instinctively that is not true. What you do at home does affect what you do at work. And what you do at work does affect what happens at home. And what you do in your thoughts has manifesting effects in your relationships. The whole point of fractal discipleship is to recognize those small, little changes, variations, perturbations of your life, your thought, your behavior, your habits, etc., can manifest themselves in very large effects. And so when Jacob says, listen, all this testing, all this trialing, yes, I'm gonna get in your biz, because that testing is going to prove you to be whole and complete, no longer separated out into these various factions of your life, but as one whole and complete life. Let me see if I can illustrate this even further. This idea is actually a very long-held spiritual and Jewish idea. One of my favorite examples comes from Fiddler on the Roof. Well, it comes from some stories that I've heard. You know that phrase where, Rabbi, is there a prayer for the Tsar? Like, the Tsar is the person who's oppressing us. Is there a prayer for the Tsar? And the rabbi says, of course. There's a prayer for everything. Question, if there's a prayer for everything, is there a prayer for going to the bathroom? Have you ever thought about praying when you go to the bathroom? No, because you don't think of the bathroom as a spiritual place. You don't think of the bathroom as a place where you give God glory and honor and praise. But did you know there actually does exist a prayer for the bathroom? After you use the restroom, you are to pray, blessed are you, Lord our God, for giving us holes in our bodies. So next time you are there, you can pray this prayer. Blessed are you, Lord our God, for giving us holes in our bodies. And the reason why you're praying that is because when one of them doesn't work, you definitely will want the Lord to help. Now we laugh at this, and this is funny and ridiculous and silly, and yes, I'm reaching down to immature, almost puerile humor just for the sake of a laugh. Yes, but the reason why this is also important is because we generally don't think of praying for this. Why? Because it's not part of our whole life. And the reason why I bring this up is to start to spurn us on to think, maybe that is just as important too. If life is fractally related, if all of these small little elements begin to add up, and if it is permeating my entire life, and if my discipleship, my faith, my love of God is supposed to be whole and complete, then maybe everything that I do should come under that awareness and understanding, even the bathroom. Another separation is, of course, between science and religion. Spark has talked about that extensively. It's still apparently a debate that goes on in some circles. But I love this phrase from Rabbi Jonathan Sacks. Science takes things apart to see how they work. Religion puts things together. to see what they mean. The effort is not to attack science for why it's wrong against the Bible and all those kinds of things. We've had plenty of those conversations. The point is, we want to see all of it put together. We want a whole and complete understanding of this world and of discipleship. You didn't know that we participated in a fractal relationship every Sunday, did you? No. Does this look familiar? Yes. We do this every Sunday. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul and all your might. Love your neighbor as yourself. What is the fractal relationship here? What is the wholeness, the completeness that we are getting here? It is this word, one. Traditionally, depending upon the circles that you walk in or run in or converse in or debate in, the Lord our God is one. It is a declaration of monotheism, a philosophical postulate to declare that there exists ontologically one God and not many. That's the point of the echad, the Hebrew word behind the word one. Echad, God is echad, one. There is no other God. And yes, that is part of it. But did you know that there's another interpretation of the one? The Lord is our God, the Lord is one, meaning there is no distinctiveness in how God acts, behaves, and moves in this world. You can trust and believe that our God is faithful and true to the fundamental character of who God is at all times, in all places, for all things. One. God does not put on a hat or a mask and act one way in one place and another way in another place. This God is the same God everywhere we are. Expand out to our global climate crisis that we are currently living through, that we have talked extensively about. And part of the reason why this exists, part of the reason why we're in the place that we are through a very long history, is we have fractured ourselves yet once again. We don't think that the small little things that we do add up to huge consequences. This is actually a phenomenal example of fractal relationships. The slight burning of carbon materials can lead to the burning of our entire globe. Now, in this brilliant book, All We Can Save, Adrian Murray Brown writes this: existence is fractal. The health of the cell is the health of the species and the planet. The idea that much of the climate movement is moving towards is not to try to globally transform everything, but to get down to you and me. Because small, little effects can have huge consequences for the planet. And if it is true that everything is fractal, then it is true that my health, that how I live, how I think and believe, could actually have huge consequences. I will say, Spark is an example. I'll try not to be too self-referential here, but you know, those of us who started Spark, it was just this thing in our head, right? And all of a sudden now, it's a thing in a lot of people's heads. And we have talked extensively through our book clubs and other expressions how this beautiful community is now having large effects out in the community, in your families, in our region as a result of what happens in here. Do not underestimate the power of these small little effects. When we don't pay attention to how we are deeply interconnected to all these things, we are essentially cutting off the branch upon which we sit, which is why we're in the situation we're in. Last one, I think. We have talked extensively about justice, ethics, morals, compassion, the way in which we treat each other, human rights, and the values. This is probably the most controversial thing I'll say. The values of human rights, dignity, humility, equality, diversity, inclusion, belonging, hope, all of the things that we hold dear in our liberal-minded world are actually all deeply interconnected with a long history of Jewish and Christian stories, teachings, and wisdom. And one of the things that we're starting to see in our culture is as we break with the stories and the traditions, you start to see how I don't need that anymore. I have the value. You start to see the degradation and the breaking down of how these values are supposed to be lived out. And the violation of human rights in our day is astonishingly egregious. And part of what we are saying, part of what we are proposing, is that being reconnected to the story, once again, that in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And then he fashioned Adam, both male and female, in God's likeness and in God's image. What a small little story. What a small little passage. What an insignificant amount of text that is. And I would say that there's substantial evidence the reason why we have the United Nations Declaration of Human Rights is because of that text. And the Human Declaration, the United Nations Human Declaration of Human Rights that we now hopefully aspire to, that we want to live by, is because of that small little phrase. My friends, the butterfly effect is real. Small little things can lead to huge, huge consequences. And as such, if we are feeling ailments in our world, it may actually be because we have fractured the wholeness. Put in one particular way, if the system is sick, the fractals are sick. And if the fractals are sick, then the system itself is also sick. Fractal discipleship is a recognition that at the base, fundamental pattern of our universe are these simple patterns that repeat themselves over and over and over again that can have wildly massive consequences for you, for I, and for our world. And if you don't pay attention to that 100,000th decimal place, that millionth decimal place, that 10 millionth decimal place, over time, just like Edler Lorenz discovered, it can have devastating consequences. It could change everything. And part of why Jacob is saying complete and whole is for us to elevate our consciousness to recognize, pay attention to it all. It all matters. What you think, what you say, what you desire, how you study, your rituals, the songs that we sing, the words that we say, your nighttime rituals. All of it matters. That's the point. We want to elevate our consciousness to reconnect with this grand narrative and to respect that deep structure that exists. When I behave and think in a certain way, it changes. And so, as our consciousness is elevated, it hopefully challenges us to live accordingly. What you say matters. How you pray matters. Your thoughts matter. Your everyday decisions matter. How you practice your faith matters. Put another way, we could say that fractal discipleship is a sacralizing of every second of your life, including the bathroom. It is to bring the sacred to everything that we do and to recognize that it is not done in vain and that that little thing that you do is actually deeply, profoundly interconnected with the grand scheme, the grand narrative of God's good design and vision for justice and hope and compassion and love in this world. As I stated before, to embrace fractal discipleship is to pursue completedness, wholeness, the recognition that the smallest patterns of life yield huge butterfly effect consequences through these self-repeating patterns, repeating the same principles over and over in a continual feedback loop. And I will leave you with this. To embrace fractal discipleship as followers of Jesus is to see that the base starting fractal pattern has been and will always be love, which is why we recite that every week, which is why Jesus said it multiple times, which is why Paul repeated it in his letters. To love God and to love your neighbor is the base pattern. Now multiply that over and over. What does love look like for yourself? What does love look like then with your family? What does love look like for your neighbor? And as you practice love and as you practice being loved, oh man, does that have massive transforming effects for the world. My brothers and sisters, whenever you face various trials, consider it all joy because you know that the testing of your faith produces endurance. And let endurance complete its work so that you may be, say it with me, complete and whole, lacking in nothing. That every single aspect of who we are and what we do matters. And very much like this ritual that we participate in every single week, I don't know, some people might think it's just a small little gesture, a fractal understanding of this universe says, actually, it's not. It's incredibly meaningful. And for those who participate in, for those who embrace the meaning, it feeds deeply into your soul, which gives rise to how you understand yourself, your relationship with the divine, which then elevates how you think about how you navigate relationships, which then may actually touch somebody's soul, who may then one day grow up and realize that that moment changed everything for me and I wanted to learn how to love and serve other people in the same way. So what we do here, my friends, according to this understanding, matters. And my hope is that as you depart and go on your day, and even as you get in your car, when that person cuts you off, what you do in that moment matters. And when you get home and you take a shower and you get in bed, whatever ritual you do there matters. All of it matters. Because you're building these fractal relationships, self-repeating patterns, over and over and over again. Shall we start with a meal? For in the night in which he was betrayed, our Lord Jesus took the bread, blessed and broke it, giving it to his disciples, saying, "Take, eat, this is my body given for you. Do this in remembrance of me." Likewise, after supper, he took the cup, gave thanks, and gave it to them, saying, "Drink this, all of you. This is my blood of the new covenant, which is shed for you and for many for the forgiveness of sins. Do this as often as you drink it in remembrance of me." My friends, all are welcome at this table. Please come as we sing.